Well, good morning. Are we ready to talk about pensions? Yeah, good. I'm so glad there are people that enjoy it as much as I do. That's really good to hear. We're delighted to be with you here with you today. It's really good to see all of you, and I do want to extend a warm thank you, a note of appreciation to Kathy Noble and Tim Tantum and Larry Holland and Maggie and UMCOM for allowing us to be here and to talk with you today. I was speaking with someone a couple days ago at the beginning of this pre-conference briefing, and he was asking me about a few questions about the pension program. And he said, well, you see, I care about the clergy. And I said, well, good, because we too care very much about the clergy. The General Board of Pension and Health Benefits is the agency that provides the benefit administration and investment, financial and health and welfare support to the clergy and lay workers of the United Methodist Church and their families. We serve about 74,000 retired and active clergy and lay workers in the United States. And over the last decade, we have been raising money and starting pension systems, sustainable pension systems, in the central conferences that need them. There are a total of 13 pension systems going into place, and we are currently implementing 7, and we hope to have all 13 finished by the end of this year. I owe a very big thank you to all of you and your colleagues, because we have currently raised $23.4 million of the $25 million that we need to get these fully into place, and that all comes from you. The donations come from active clergy, retired clergy, conferences, and other very caring lay people throughout the connection. So thank you very much. As we approach this general conference, we find ourselves at a crossroads, continuing to try to provide sound, adequate, lifetime benefits for clergy and their spouses once their careers in ministry are at an end, and at the same time, balancing the costs of providing those benefits and ensuring that conferences will be able to pay that in the long term. Wesley's words underscore our mission, and this is from Wesley's sermon on the use of money. And after he talks about earning all you can, saving all you can, and giving all you can, he then goes on to say, when the possessor of heaven and earth brought you into being and placed you in this world, he placed you here not as a proprietor, but as a steward. We take our stewardship role very seriously at the General Board of Pension and Health Benefits, and that role is over a century old. We celebrated our centennial in 2008, and in fact, this agency was brought into being first as the Conference Board of Claimants in 1908 through the General Conference. We are a church agency, as you know. We are a fiduciary of assets under management that secure the retirement futures for clergy and lay workers, and currently we manage about $17 billion. We are independent of general church funds. We do not receive any funds through the general church. We think it is very, very important to maintain independence of pension assets from general church assets or program assets. And we are stewards of the financial and personal well-being of clergy, lay workers, and their families. While steward describes the role that we have at the General Board, it also describes the role that we are increasingly finding ourselves playing as a voice across the connection. As we have gone through the financial upheaval in the markets that has been discussed over the last few days, we have found ourselves as a good steward trying hard to listen to the connection, figure out where the gaps are, and then bring the financial discussion together, because we have learned over the last few years that if our church is to be able to continue its mission and ministry, and in fact to thrive, then it must have good financial management and the knowledge across the connection to carry that out. The General Board of Pension and Health Benefits is bringing 36 petitions to this general conference, which cover a variety of changes to our pension plans, to the Book of Discipline, which are intended to address some of the cross-conference pension liabilities, to the Comprehensive Protection Plan, which is the death and disability program for clergy, and a few petitions from the Church Systems Task Force focused on the health and well-being of clergy. Our focus today is on the two major choices in the pension plan. We are bringing two plans. I don't believe we have ever done that before. This is unprecedented. And they do two very different things. One is very similar to the current plan, the Clergy Retirement Security Program. It is a defined benefit and defined contribution program, and we'll talk more about what that means and how the strengths of those plans support each other and the weaknesses and offset the weaknesses of each of them. And that is the plan that our board of directors recommends. But we have had to roll up our sleeves, sharpen our pencils after listening to conferences, and reduce the benefits somewhat and reduce the cost somewhat to the conferences so that this is sustainable 10 and 20 years out. The second option is what we call a defined contribution only plan. It reduces the cost volatility to the conferences and provides a retirement account that clergy can manage. It does not provide lifetime benefits. There's also the option, as we found as we started to meet with delegations, we found we had a third option, and that is to do nothing. If you vote down both plans, there is no plan change. However, we think that it's important, very important, to consider these two options very carefully. They result from competing priorities within the church for the support of clergy and the financial considerations of conferences and local churches. Our goal for this session, and by the time we finish the hour that we have at the plenary session, at General Conference, and all the work with the delegations, is for all of the delegates to have enough of an understanding between these two types of plans that you can make an informed decision that reflects the values of the church. As we entered this quadrennium, we really had no intention of bringing in a new plan. We had put in the Clergy Retirement Security Program. It was this balance that both protected clergy for a lifetime, but also had a defined contribution, a savings account component, and we felt we were finished for a number of quadrennia. However, following the economic crisis of 2008, we found that we didn't know enough about the finances of the church to make sure that 10 and 20 years out, we had sustainable programs. So the catalyst for the change became the conferences themselves. After the severe market downturn, we started getting lots of messages about significant concerns about making contributions, both in the near term, and then because everything we do is projected long term, also on a long term basis. So we formed a group called the Sustainability Advisory Group because we determined we all needed to learn more at all levels. So I have to thank everybody that's in this picture. This is a group of 16 conference officers and treasurers and a director of Connectional Ministries and the GCFA staff and General Board of Pension staff who all rolled up their sleeves and for 3 to 4 months focused intensely on conference and local church finances. We confirmed some things we suspected, and we all learned some things that we didn't know about the finances of the connection. I'd like to ask Dale to come up and tell you a little bit about what we learned, and then more about the details of the plans that we are presenting to you.
Thank you, Barbara. This group set out to answer the question, what level of benefits is affordable? What they found pretty quickly into their work is that they really couldn't look at just benefits in isolation because there were too many other intersections with benefits and other aspects of the financial life of the church. So the sustainability group began to look at financial data across the connection. And some of the things that they began to talk about some time ago then carried over into the work of Call to Action and other groups that have since reported out. The start with. Pardon my being technically challenged here from time to time. The group looked at local church expenditures, which is the chart that you see here, and realized that benefits, clergy benefits, those that are directed by the General Conference, is actually a pretty small part of the total picture of dollars that go through the local church. It's the green band across the bottom of that chart. Right above that is general church apportionments. Those are the two areas, the pension plans and the general church funds, that we've put a lot of emphasis on as a possible way to help reduce cost and relieve the burden on annual conferences and local churches. But they're actually a pretty small part of the picture. And over time, they've been increasing at less than the rate of inflation. On the other hand, they're a pretty big part of annual dollars that flow through the annual conference. Just clergy benefits alone, not only pension, but also health, which is an even greater component, on average across the connection amounts to about 50 cents of each dollar that flows through the annual conference. So while they're not a large part of the total picture at the local church level, they are at the annual conference level. And so, therefore, had to be given serious consideration. The rest of the large yellow block there are primarily things like operating expenses, payment on principal and interest, payment on debt, and compensation for non-clergy staff, lay staff, all of which have been increasing at greater than the rate of inflation over the course of the last number of years. And so the pressures of more and more money coming from, unfortunately, fewer and fewer United Methodists probably would have brought us to this place somewhere anyway. The economic collapse of 2008, I think, brought us there more quickly than where we are. And the sustainability group concluded that it's getting harder and harder for local churches to support full-time clergy. And in some cases, that pressure is exacerbated by conferences having too many clergy that they need to appoint. So it's not only a matter of the cost of benefits, but the number of persons that the benefits are being provided for as well. And the sustainability group came back and said, as a result of these trends that have been putting pressure on the church over time, and the challenges that we have financially, we believe that it's important to look at reducing the cost for benefits, which unfortunately means reducing the benefit itself, as Barbara already mentioned. And another thing that we believe is that it's important to look at making those costs more predictable, less subject to the whims of the market. And that's really what brings us to the two plans that we're offering to the General Conference. Because we essentially have two important values that are incompatible with one another. One is the importance of providing lifetime income for our retired clergy. That has been a tenet of the church's benefit and pension plans for decades. But the other is keeping costs predictable and affordable for the church. And the two do not fully harmonize with one another. So these two plans are an opportunity, really, for the denomination to determine which is more important. We are recommending option number one. Staying, our board of directors believes that for the sake of the church at large, conferences, local churches, clergy, over the long term, the best approach is to stay with the present structure of both a defined benefit and a defined contribution component that's in the current plan, but at a lower level. But if the importance of cost control and predictability and removing volatility and potential liability and all of those things are now, if that's now the driving most important concern, then the defined contribution only plan is what gives us that. What is all this defined benefit, defined contribution lingo anyway, some of you are probably saying. So let's just do a real quick primer on the kind of basic concepts. In this few minutes here, we don't really have the opportunity to go into great detail about the plan changes themselves. We welcome the chance to come and meet with your delegation to do that, and in fact, we've already met with about half of the delegations in one form or another and have another dozen or so scheduled. So for the remaining 15 or so, 18 of you, we'd welcome the chance to come and talk through the details with you. I'd have to say I've been gratified to find that delegates have been interested in this stuff. You know, I was a little bit afraid, like when my kid was small, he came into the room where my wife and I were, asked her a question about something he was dealing with on his homework. She referred him to me. Your dad's pretty good at that kind of thing. He said, "Mom, I don't want to know that much about it." I was afraid that was what we would encounter as we got out and talked to delegations, but I've been gratified that they actually were interested in the concepts that we were trying to bring to them. So thanks to those of you who have already had us participate with you, and we offer the invitation to those who haven't. Anyway, defined benefit, defined contribution for a... In terms of the cost to the employer, in this case the conference or the church, with a defined benefit approach, that can vary as the market varies and as other factors vary. Thus the problem of volatile cost, which conferences are not all that able to deal with. I'm a has-been conference treasurer. I recognize the challenges of that. With a defined contribution, the cost is pretty predictable. It's going to vary mostly just as compensation varies, and that's about the only factor. On the other hand, just the opposite when it comes to what the clergy person gets when he or she retires. With a defined benefit, you can count on it. It's going to be there. With a defined contribution, it might or might not be, depending on what happens in the marketplace and other factors. What creates those differences are two different categories of risk. The primary one is investment risk. How well the monies that are put into the plan earn, how they perform. And with the defined benefit approach, the employer, in our case the annual conference, has the investment risk. With a defined contribution approach, the individual, the retired clergy person, has the investment risk. The other one, important as well, less so than investments, probably is longevity. It was awkward to me to talk about longevity as a risk. I thought it was risky to not have longevity. But from the standpoint of pension plans, I do have a risk that I need for my retirement benefits to last as long as I do. And with a defined benefit approach, if I live a long, long time, well beyond my expected lifetime, the risk for that lies with the employer or the conference. With a defined contribution approach, it lies with me as the individual. I could live longer than my retirement benefits last. So those are kind of the things that are in tension as we look at possible ways that the church may go here. Need to provide one caveat about our proposals, and that is that they would be applicable if either of these options is adopted by the General Conference for service from that effective date forward. So service that has already been accrued, those of you who are active clergy, if one of these is adopted, your benefits earned up until the effective date would not change from what they are today. It would be the new service that you would have after that time going forward. Either of these options will initially bring about a cost reduction of about 15%. But the difference, and that's overall, across the entire U.S. Some conferences will be more, some will be less than that. And the differences will vary more from conference to conference in the defined contribution-only approach than in the defined benefit-defined contribution combination. And that's because those costs are more dependent on individual clergy's compensation, which tends to vary a lot from conference to conference. So to wrap up on the plans themselves, our recommendation is to keep a combination plan with both elements where there is sharing of the risk between the conference and the participants. Over the long term, the defined benefit part of this approach gives us really more efficiency in terms of the benefit dollars that can be gotten out versus the dollars that the church puts in. We believe that it is strikes the right balance that would be best in the denomination's long run, for the denomination in the long run. Again, however, our role is not to set the values for the church. And if the predictability of the cost and the avoidance of volatility and potential liability is now the primary driving factor, then we need to go the other way, which is the defined contribution only. Shifts the risk to the participants, but protects the conference from those types of fluctuations. You would have been disappointed if I didn't have at least one chart that looked like it came out of an economics class. The chart here is the pre-82 benefit levels, and I'm using it just to make a point about the thing I want to say next with regard to some other plan changes. The pre-82 benefit levels across the conferences versus the level at which those are funded. The church has allowed more flexibility in the old pre-82 part of its pension program than in any part since in terms of individual conference decisions, and less accountability and less requirement for funding the benefit as it was earned. With everything that we've done from 82 on, the focus has been on paying for it at the time that it was earned as opposed to paying for it later on when it began to be paid out. So what you can see here is that there's not necessarily a correlation between how high the conference's benefit level is and how well they are funded. And as a result of that dynamic and concerns that creates then across the connection about the shared liability of these pension plan benefits, we're bringing some additional retirement-related proposals to fund the older liabilities first, to reduce the potential liability in the ministerial pension plan, that's what MPP is the code for, and to address the concerns about one conference potentially endangering another conference by the benefit decisions that they make. And then finally, we have a few changes related to our death and disability plan. We can give you the details about this in a meeting or from the material on our website, but that are designed to keep that plan sustainable at its current cost level so that it is able to continue to provide adequate benefits over the time to come in the area of both disability benefits and retiree death benefits. Finally, as Barbara mentioned, we have co-submitted with the Church Systems Task Force some legislation that pertains to benefits. I commend their report to you. They did. Their work is based in research, and it contains a number of items of broad interest beyond just the benefit area. And I'll turn it back to Barbara now for some closing remarks.
For a quick wrap-up, and we'll be down in just a minute. Just want to say, again, we want to support you in every way that we can. With information so that you and your delegations can make good decisions at General Conference. We have our website at www.gbohp.org that has all of our General Conference legislation on it. We have all kinds of information to support you. We are happy, willing, excited to come out and meet with your delegations and talk through this. One conference is our hero. They gave us 5 hours one day. And we're able to answer every question. It was just a great thing for us. So we think we worked through all the issues. Yeah. And we also have our media relations person here, Colette Neese, there in the back, and she's also at the booth, and she will get you whatever information you want or need. So please call or contact us. As you go forward into General Conference, you are in our prayers. We wish you all the best. We want to support you every way we can. And we know that the decisions that you will make will affect many, many clergy for many years to come. God bless you, and thank you for this time. Maggie?
Colette, you want to raise your hand so if there's any folks who don't know you? They are. Okay, thank you. We have time here for a few questions.
Okay, Laurie Haller, West Michigan Conference. My question is, for a person who's been in ministry 20 years right now, what will the difference be in the pension that they receive when they're retired, as opposed to if we would keep in the same plan that we have now? Have you done those projections? And then have you done a projection on if a new person's going into ministry now, what would the difference be between now and the two plans that are being proposed?
Yeah, Lord, for a person who's going into ministry new, and say they had a 30-year career, I know we've looked at those numbers. The difference would be about a 15% reduction in their retirement income, or possibly more because of a proposal that we're making regarding possibly more for a married clergy person because of a proposal that we're making with regard to support for spouses. And I can get into the details with any of you who want to know more about that. For a person who's already been in ministry, the closer they are to retirement, the less the impact. So if 20 years is, two-thirds of a 30-year career and the person served another 10, then you maybe could take a third of my 15% and be pretty close. I don't know that I have those exact numbers. Also want to say that we don't ask for 5 hours when we come meet with your delegation. We were glad to have it that time, but we can have a good discussion in an hour and a half or an hour if we need to. So,
I would just, if I could add to that very quickly, when we first started to look at the retirement plan design, of course we wanted to make sure we stayed within the range of an adequate retirement benefit. And historically, as we've compared ourselves to other denominations and replacement ratios, what you'll get in retirement after you stop your active service, the United Methodist benefit was right about the middle of that range. And so with this design reduction, we worked very hard to reduce it so that it stayed within the range of an adequate benefit in retirement, but it is now lower in that range. But we wanted very much to stay within that range.
Other questions? Yes.
Bonnie Martin, New England Conference. I wonder if you could just speak briefly to the work that the General Board continues to do. I know there's a report coming out about the Socially Responsible Investing Task Force, and if you could just give us a few highlights around that work and the work that you continue to do to ensure all our investments are socially responsible, that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you, Bonnie. The General Board has a duty, paragraph 1504 of the Book of Discipline, to invest as a fiduciary in the best interests of participants of the plans. In addition, in paragraph 716, it admonishes us and all other foundations and agencies to invest as much as possible in alignment with the social principles. We take that very seriously. We screen, it was 5 screens, now recently we've added a 6th screen so that money is not invested in companies with more than 10% of their revenues in gambling, alcohol, pornography, tobacco, munitions, and now private prisons.
In addition, we have four staff members within our corporate relations department whose full-time job it is to work with organizations, voting proxies in alignment with church principles, carrying out social advocacy, working with other church partners, and being very active to talk with companies about United Methodist principles and being good citizens. We continue to be very active in that. Last week, we actually were able to have a meeting with Caterpillar. I know that they have been front and center on some of the discussions, especially with regard to Israel and Palestine. And we think we had a good discussion with them. We will be starting to write that information up, and we place that on our website and try to keep people who are interested informed as we go along. Again, we take this seriously and work with it very prayerfully. Our board is very vigilant on both United Methodist principles. We have a committee that just focuses on that, as well as our fiduciary role. I hope that answers your question, Bonnie.
We have time for one more question, if there's one out there. Yes.
I'm Tom Berland. I'm a pastor from Virginia, a clergy delegate. It seems that a defined benefits plan, by its very nature, is based on the optimism that an organization will be stable or growing in the future. And so I'm curious why you're recommending the option that includes defined benefits. I want to state, personally, I am a hopeful person. I work that way in my church every day, but I'm also a pragmatist. And so listening to Lovett Weems talk about the age tsunami, listening to the statistics that have come to us in other forums and other places, help me understand your optimism over the next 30 years, because my fear is, and I'm trying not to make a speech, but it's just my question. My fear is the church has a duty to care for the vulnerable. And clergy at the age of 80 who find out that optimism was not well-founded are very vulnerable. So it's not that I lack a theology of hope in my question. It's just I'm just curious where your optimism is coming from. Frankly, I'd like more of it in my own life. So that's my question.
It's a very good question, and we, too, look at all of the charts and the demographics and stare at them long and hard. And we try to – we also have a theology of hope, but we try not to build that into our actuarial assumptions. you heard yesterday from GCFA, and you heard that there's we look at each market move, especially downward, and we all get pretty anxious, and we say the end of the world is coming soon. But if we look at the long-term trends, at the long-term returns in the market, at even what has happened since the recent downturn in the market, so as far as investments, as we look at the fact that our church is now 13 million people, and there is growth, we also don't think it's time yet for a theology of despair. So our leading value is support and care of clergy, and we do struggle with how much do we manage ongoing liabilities and knowing that we have those liabilities versus trying to reduce all costs and liabilities. We think based on our projections that especially for the next 10 to 20 years, this combination of plans still makes good sense and provides the right management of the risks that are in front of us. Now, that is to say that 10 to 15 years from now, provided this plan with any defined benefit is still in place, we will be scrutinizing that very carefully to say, is it time to change? Did the church continue its downward trends, and so now, folks, we just need to start jettisoning liabilities? Or, in fact, has it continued to grow, and is some other design or the current design going to serve?